Rodrigo is Kyle Castillo from the University of Oregon, and he's going to have a vote.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, so consider the sequence of zeros and ones. It has a very interesting property that if we take a window, say of size 4, like this, and we go through the whole cycle, we end up going through every binary sequence of length 4 exactly once. Sorry, it's a bit drunk, huh? But, and this is if we consider the end looping back to the beginning here, like that. Okay, so such a sequence is called a de Bruijn sequence, although it was discovered 50 years earlier by Louis Saint Marie. And but both of them proved that they exist for all k. So by k I mean all k ary cycles of order m. So m in this case would be 4. Okay. Just a note, you can actually count the number of them. So like all good things in life, we can prove this by drawing a graph. And the vertices are going to be all the k ary tuples of length m. And two tuples will be adjacent if their last m minus 1 matches the first m minus 1. And by adjacent, I mean the directed edge. And so de Bruijn cycle would correspond to Hamiltonian cycle in this graph. And you can use a little trick and show that there always is a Hamiltonian cycle in this graph. So about 40 years after de Bruijn, there's a mathematician named Percy Diaconis from Stanford, and he used to be a magician before he was a mathematician. And he was able to use the de Bruijn sequence for a really nice card trick, which I'm not going to show because I screwed it up before. But anyway, so he was wondering if we could sort of generalize this idea and find a de Bruijn cycle, which they called a universal cycle. They wanted to know if they can find it for other combinatorial structures. So, for example, a K subset of N, sure nobody wants to verify it, but that's a universal cycle. Permutations of N, and what I'm going to be talking about is the set partitions. And the k partitions of n. So the first problem is you have to decide how you're going to represent the partition, because you want the universal cycle to be a string of characters of some sort. So there's kind of a clever way to do it. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to take a sequence of letters. I'm going to use n minus 1. I mean, in general, you can use less, but for what I'm going to talk about, we need n minus 1 letters. And the partition is represented by a sequence of letters where the letters that are identical, the positions of them are the ones that are in the same part. Well, what I mean is that's a partition. 3 and 5 are in the same part, and the third and the fifth letter are the same. And all that matters is the positions of the identical letters. So we're going to say these two are equivalent because they both would represent that partition. So I'm going to talk about k partitions, well, just one instance of them. So if k is equal to 1 or n, it's trivial to find a universal cycle. And what I'm going to talk about mainly is when k is equal to n minus 1. So the first thing to notice is that since the parts are non-empty, you're going to get exactly one subset of size 2, and the rest are going to be a size 1. And if you draw a graph similarly to how the de Bruijn graph goes, you get a graph here. Well, here's a piece of the graph. The first thing to notice is that we're going to get these forced paths from a partition, say, I and n, so in this case n is 5, it'll be forced to go all the way down to here. And from here, it can go to any vertex of this form, I, n. That's because this one, since there's only one part of size 2, there has to be, this one has to be different than all of these. So it has to be, the next one would have to be that partition. Okay, so what's been done before, Glenn Hurlburt in his PhD thesis, he showed that you can get a universal cycle for n is odd, and he conjectured that there's none exist if n is even. Okay, so since we get these fourth paths, you can just contract them, and you contract each fourth path, and it turns out you just get a copy of Kn minus 1. And, well, you can label the vertices of it by 1 to n minus 1. And so the Hamiltonian cycle in the original graph just corresponds to a Hamiltonian cycle in Kn minus 1. Of course, there's a lot of them. And that's really just a permutation of n minus 1. Oh. So by that notation, I just mean the set 1 to n. Okay, if you haven't seen it before. Now the problem is, unlike in the De Bruijn cycle case, all the Hamiltonian cycles give a De Bruijn cycle. In this case, even if you have a Hamiltonian cycle, you don't necessarily get a universal cycle. So, for example, if you construct this one, n equals 4 and 1, 2, 3 is a Hamiltonian cycle. You construct it. Eventually, you want these last n minus 1 to be exact same as these first n minus 1. In this case, they're not. So the question is, when are they the same? Okay. Now, the second thing to notice about this graph is what's happening is that here you have n minus 1 distinct letters, and by the time you get to the end, you have n minus 1 distinct letters again, but they're just permuted. And they're actually permuted in this way, and it looks a bit ugly, but it's nicer than that in reality. I'll just show you. So that permutation just looks like that. You just take k, add k again, add k again until you get to 0, you don't write to 0, you just cut it off. And all those calculations are done mod n. And, well, there's an example. You start with 4. 4 plus 4 is 7, or is 8 mod 1, or mod 7 is 1 plus 4, dot, dot, dot. And so we get this theorem. So what this means this property of these permutations has that the inverse sigma k is inverse is equal to sigma n minus k. And so you get this theorem, which is pretty easy. And all it's really saying is, so given a permutation of n minus 1, so for example, if you can cross off pairs that are beside each other and that sum to n, where n is 9 in this case, so 5, 4, the permutations corresponding to these two numbers are the identity, and 2, 7 is the identity, 3, 6, and 8, 1. And then, so in this case, this permutation would give you a universal cycle. Another way to look at it, if you draw a circle and write these numbers down evenly spaced down the circle, and then connect the pairs that sum to n, then you get no crossings. So for a while we thought that this would be a sufficient condition, that if you have no crossings, then you get a universal cycle. But as it turns out, starting at n equals 9, we've got some counterexamples. Here's one. If you work it out, the permutations is the identity, but that doesn't satisfy the no crossing property. And I'll have a bit more to say about that in a few minutes. So from here, we can define another permutation. they call it tau kj. It's a bit easier, but here we have, instead of a permutation of 1 to n minus 1, it's a permutation of 0 to n minus 1. And this easy, well, you have these two trivial properties. And if you take any transposition and multiply it by tau k, then it commutes, the two commute in this way. And most importantly, all these sigma k's, we can write it in terms of a tau k and a transposition. So we can do that, and then by this commuting rule, we can commute all the transpositions to one side and all the taus to one side, and then the taus will cancel out, most of them. Well, if n is odd, n minus 1 is even, and all the taus will cancel out. And if n is even, then you'll have tau of n over 2 left over. Okay, and you don't actually have to. There's a nice way to look at the product of transpositions you get on the right. So as an example, okay, so all you have to do, you take your permutation of 1 to n minus 1, you take the sequence of partial sums mod n. So, for example, if n is equal to 9, you get that sequence of partial sums. And all you do is just take two copies and intertwine them, and then put some brackets. So, I need that ruler, but here's your one copy of the sequence of partial sums, and then here's the second one, the next one beside it, and then we have one over there. If n is even, it's similar, but after you take the sequence of partial sums, you have to add n over 2 to each of them. And it can be shown that, well, it's easy to show that in that sequence of partial sums plus n over 2, 0 always has to appear. And that's kind of important for this theorem. Well, it is important. So, you don't have to read it, but the idea is you have that tau of n over 2, which is itself a product of transpositions, and you have that big product of transpositions on the right. And since 0 appears in the sequence of partial sums, you're going to have at least one number between 1 and n minus 1 that doesn't appear in the product of transpositions. But on the other hand, every number between 1 and n minus 1 appears in tau of n over 2. So you're going to have that one number, at least, that's not fixed. So the product of permutations, if n is even, can never be the identity. Okay. So a little bit more about these exceptional cases. So if n is odd, for some reason, you get 48 total, but they can all be obtained from these kind of three base cases through cyclic rotations and reversals. If you draw that kind of circle diagram, like I did there, you get this weird property, well, not weird, but an interesting property that they all intersect exactly in the center. And another thing I tried doing, I didn't really get anything out of it, but if you draw a graph, if you take the vertices of the graph as the numbers that appear in the sequence of partial sums and join two vertices if those two numbers appear in a transposition, then you get that graph on the top right. So it's a bit mysterious why these, I guess, end up being the identity. But if you go up to n equals 11, you get kind of three, but they all seem to be somehow related to the n equals 9 case. So the first one is just like a regular kind of star pattern. And if you draw the graph, it looks like that. The second, well, you have a star pattern in the middle, and then these two sum to n on the end. And then the third, I call it a split star, but it's kind of weird how it works. But if you draw the graph, they all look like this, where that one is kind of split, or in the graph, you just pinch that one arm. So that, anyways, it's a bit mysterious why these work, and if anyone has any ideas, I'd be happy to hear. Okay, so there are a lot of other open questions Not too many people have worked on this stuff, but even though it seems pretty interesting. K subsets of a multiset. I don't think anything's been done on that. K dimensional subspaces. I think Jay Bueller at Reed College has done some work on that. And tree designs, pretty much anything you could think of. You could try getting a universal cycle out of them. T cover U cycles, by that I just mean you get every object in your set T times in your big cycle. And you can go up to higher dimensional things. Like here's a universal De Bruyne torus for every 2x2 matrix of zeros and ones. And last time I did this talk, I was told it was way too long and too short. But thanks. Yeah. So what would you use? I think so. I haven't worked on it myself personally, but I'm pretty sure that's what he did.